Somewhere else. Buy your books here? That's your name for your shop. Nina's Book Buzz? You're not a children's educational television programme, although you do dress like you're in one. Nina sighed. What? Said Sarinda. Come on. You've obviously dreamed about this for ages. I mean, look at all the crap you sashed away for it. I absolutely don't believe that someone as obsessed as you with books and words hasn't thought about a name. Well, said Nina, looking embarrassed and staring at her feet. She'd never said this out loud to anyone before, barely even admitted it to herself. I knew it, said Sarinda. I knew it. Go on, tell your Auntie G. Nina shrugged. You'll think it's stupid. You've moved an entire country away with a big bunch of books and a van, said Sarinda. I already think you're totally stupid. Oh, yeah, said Nina. I suppose. She kicked her heels a little. Well, she said, I always thought if I ever had a little shop, and I only wanted a very little one, I might call it the Little Shop of Happy Ever After. Sarinda stared at her for a moment. Nina felt her face grow very red. There was a long pause. Sarinda stepped forward and peered inside the van. Nina had even managed to fix up a light in the corner, a rug stuck down with suckers, a table with a comfortable chair beside it, so it made a little reading corner. Sarinda smiled and turned round. Yeah, she said. Yes, I like it. I really like it. I can do that. Really? Said Nina. Yes, said Sarinda. Look at that table and chair. That is just so cute. It's a cutesy name, but I think it's all right. I think it'll be okay. She picked up the paint and a brush, and Nina's face broke into a huge grin. Mind you, it does look like you could just sit there all day. What if someone just sits there all day? Then they obviously need to, said Nina. But we won't be staying anywhere all day. We'll be like the lands above the magic faraway tree, arriving and leaving without notice. Sarinda smiled. Well, just don't crash it, she said, rolling up her sleeves. Again. Hmm, said Nina, who was a little worried she'd overdone the fairy lights. Right now, I'm most worried about fusing it. She fetched a couple of beers, then stood back and watched as Sarinda first chalked a rough outline, then, with clear, precise strokes and a lovely hand, wrote, The Little Shop of Happy Ever After, on the side. Nina thought she'd never been so happy. Finally, Sarinda pronounced herself satisfied. They both stood back, and Nina, rather self-consciously, chinked her beer against Sarinda's. We should have had a ribbon, Sarinda pointed out, to chop. Nina gazed at the little shop. It was beautiful, far bigger inside than it seemed, with the tidy rows of books, the bean bags, and even a little set of library steps that Nina had liberated when the new head of development had asked what use they could possibly be in the new media centre. They threw the back doors open wide, counted to three, and turned the ignition. The fairy lights and the big bronze letters lit up as if it was Christmas, the bunting flapping in the wind. Hooray! Said Sarinda, and clapped despite herself. Nina stared, amazed. It was as if her dream had come to life and was standing in front of her, with the fields behind them, the meadow butterflies flittering amongst the daisies, and an owl hooting somewhere in the distance. She could barely believe it, and couldn't stop smiling. Let's go sell some books, she said. Where shall we start? At that exact moment, a Land Rover turned in at the gate, honking loudly. Nina glanced at her watch. It was nearly 6 p.m. Still bright daylight, of course. She turned round. Normally, people didn't honk their horns on the farm. It made the chickens crazy. Shading her eyes, she saw a bunch of young men, mostly ruddy and cheery-looking.
Lennox!
One of them was shouting. They looked surprised to see Nina and Sarinda there as they drove in and came to a halt. Nina was shocked to see they were all wearing kilts.
"Whoa," said Sarinda. "Look at you lot."
"Look at you," said one man instantly, in that local musical brogue. "We're the ones looking smart. You're all covered in paint."
"What's this?"
said another. "It looks cool."
"It's our book bus," said Sarinda instantly. The young guy jumped down.
"What have you got like?"
The others laughed and made catcalls.
"Aye, have you got any naughty for him?"
"Shut up. At least I can read. All you can do is look at pictures of nutty ladies on the internet, you big fanny."
"Quite," said Nina. "Do you want to come in?"
There was more catcalling behind them, but the young chap jumped up happily and started to browse the shelves, and eventually curiosity drew the others forward to have a look too.
"It's nice," said the one who'd been rude before, shuffling his feet.
Nina was embarrassed to ask them if they were going somewhere special, in case they always dressed like that. Some of them were in black tie from the waist up, though, so surely they were. The kilts looked lovely altogether. She knew that the tartans indicated families and clans. She liked the older, worsted ones in faded reds and greens, although the rich purples and blacks were also smart, together with cream socks on well-shaped calves. All the men had a solid, healthy look about them, and as they spoke more, it was obvious that they were farmers.
"Oh, knock up Lennox, for God's sake. What's he doing?"
"He was up all night lambing," said Nina in his defence. They all burst out laughing.
"Och, aye, as opposed to the full night slumber the rest of us get this time of year," said one.
"Where are you all going?" asked Sarinda.
"Young farmer's dance," said another, who had bright red hair and green eyes. "Are yous no coming to that? I thought that's why you were here. They're always short of lasses."
"The young farmer's what?" said Sarinda. "What is this? 1932?
Nina was distracted for a second. Coming out of the house, looking slightly embarrassed to be all togged up, was Lennox, to a chorus of good-natured approval and some hoots. He was wearing a pale green tweed jacket over a plain cream shirt. His kilt was pale green too, with a fine red line, and he had matching flashes in his socks and stout brogues. His hair had been flattened, none too successfully as it happened, as errant curls were already popping back up here and there.
"Hurry up, man!"
Nina felt a little put out that Lennox hadn't mentioned the dance to her. No, he was right, she thought. It was nothing to do with her. He was her landlord, she was his tenant. The last thing he was going to do was start asking her to dances. This was somebody else's social life, after all. She was new here. She'd have to find her own.
"Did you no invite the lasses?" came a voice.
"I didn't realise there were two lasses," said Lennox, moving to shake Sarinda's hand. "Nice to meet you."
"Ooh,"
said Sarinda, casting a look at Nina. She was obviously quite impressed.
"I've never met anyone in a kilt before. Nice to meet you too, sir."
Nina stifled a giggle, and Sarinda gave her a dirty look. Lennox raised his eyebrows. Then he spotted the van, where Nina lingered shyly.
"Wow," he said, standing back to inspect it. "Look at that."
He appeared genuinely impressed. The young man who'd been inside came out triumphantly, waving three books on the Second World War.
"Look at these. I'm taking them."
"He'd always rather read than dance with a girl," said one of the lads.
"Not sure I blame him. Some of the lasses coming,"
said one, instantly hushed by his fellows.
"Oh, they're all lovely and charming, is what I mean," he said, colouring thickly.
Nina happily took the money for the books. Splendid brand new hardbacks, too, glossy and fresh. She thought he would enjoy them.
"Right then," said the red-headed chap, whose name was Hamish. "We'd better get a move on. You know what a crush it gets. Use up for it."
He nodded at Nina and Sarinda. Nina instinctively glanced at Lennox.
You could come if you liked," he said,
as if it didn't bother him one way or the other.
"There's never enough girls at these things."
"You should come to Birmingham," said Sarinda. "It's crawling with girls. Far too many."
There was an awkward silence. They all stood around the courtyard nervously.
"Yes, of course we're coming," said Sarinda eventually.
"Really?"
said Nina, nervous. The idea of a big, noisy dance where she didn't know anyone made her profoundly uncomfortable. She would be much happier kicking back with a beer with Sarinda, then spending the night reading a Regency romance, if that was all right with everyone.
"Come on, Nina, you big nerd," said Sarinda. I've not come all this way to sit in and watch you read all evening. Hamish glanced at his watch.
Can you be ready quickly?
2 hours, 3 tops, said Sarinda.
Oh, I'm kidding.
Woo-hoo, said Sarinda. What would you do without me? They were putting lipstick on side by side in the bathroom.
I don't know, said Nina. Keep my dignity?
Sarinda ignored her.
I wonder how sex-starved they really are. Sarinda! Come on, it's just men up here. All those lovely, hunky farm boys. I mean, it's nuts. I don't think I've seen another woman since I got here. Certainly no one as hot as us.
Sarinda, please. I've just moved here.
Yes, but I'm on my holidays. I wonder if they serve pina coladas.
I very much doubt it. The one thing Nina had never thought to pack was a party dress. It had come very low down the list of things she'd expected to need. Instead, she found a pretty floral shift. It wasn't in the least dressy, and she didn't have any jewellery at all. But she did find, somewhat to her surprise, that her legs were brown from being out and about in the sun, so the dress would do. She curled her hair back off her face in a slightly Second World War style, added a bright red lipstick at Sarinda's suggestion, and figured she would just have to manage as best she could. Sarinda, on the other hand, was always prepared for every eventuality, and slipped on a diamante top as if she'd expected to go to a major social event all along. The boys were very complimentary as they emerged 20 minutes later and budged up on the shelf seating of the Land Rover. Lennox said very little, and Nina suspected he slightly regretted asking them. Well, that was tough luck. The sun was still high in the sky, the fields golden, the wind fresh rather than biting, and everything seemed well with the world. She turned her head for one last look at the little shop of Happy Ever After, and couldn't help smiling in satisfaction.
"You're proud of that, aren't you?" he said, seeing her glance at it.
"Well, don't sound so surprised."
"No, no," he said, then lapsed into silence again.
They twisted through country lanes, occasionally cresting amazing hills, lit up all the way to the sea, a patchwork of light and shade that stretched for miles and miles. Great armies of wind farms marched across the hills like sentinels.
"I can't believe you didn't remind me to bring a jacket," said Sarinda.
"It's not like it's not signposted by the miles of wind turbines."
"You're right," said Nina, almost smugly.
"It's so much worse than miles and miles of identical terraced houses and discount outlets." They heard the dance before they saw it. Down a steep little mud track, tractors were parked up in rows, along with dirt-spattered Land Rovers, in front of a huge barn decorated with flowers. People were spilling out from it, sitting around on hay bales. Young men, all in kilts, of course, were drinking pints and letting off steam.
"Once a quarter," said Hamish, his green eyes twinkling. "It's where you're meant to meet your wife."
"Seriously?" said Sarinda, leaning forward.
"Of course, it's not like that any more. Not a cattle market at all."
"So nobody meets their partners there these days?" There was some nervous shuffling around the Land Rover.
"Aye, yeah, well, most folk, like."
"I think I'm going to like 1932, said Sarinda cheerfully. Inside the barn, it was incredibly hot, simply from the crush of bodies, and didn't smell of cow at all. Instead, it smelled of deodorant, aftershave, and heavily applied perfume, beer and pipe tobacco. It was also incredibly noisy. In the corner was a four-piece band, a violin, a bauran, a whistle, and an accordion, playing music at 1,000 miles an hour. On one side was a roughly set-up bar made of wooden barrels and trestle tables, where teenage bar staff dispensed pints of the local 80-shilling ale at lightning speed, and hurled huge gin and tonics and glasses of wine across the counter with abandon. All the cash was simply dumped in a large pot. The queue at the bar was thick. In the other half of the room, people were... well, at first, Nina wasn't exactly sure what they were doing. It didn't seem to make sense until she started concentrating. The men were hurling the women around at breakneck speed, and it took her a moment to realize that they were dancing, It looked absolutely brutal.
Wow, she said.
It was a lot to take in. There were obviously far more men than women, but when she looked at the women who were there, she immediately realized she was notably underdressed. They had high hairstyles and proper evening gowns, some stiff and long, lots of black lace pulled tightly over muscular upper bodies, and makeup applied with a heavy hand. They were all in high heels. In comparison, Nina wasn't dressed for a party at all. But in fact, knowing that she wasn't trying to make an impression, which could sometimes make her feel very anxious at events, she felt light and easy in the hot, perfumed room, and didn't mind even when Sarinda glanced at her and said, "Wow, you look like a proper country girl," which Nina realized was obviously a compliment of some kind. They supped their drinks and chatted to the boys, even though their eyes were on stalks, and their heads swiveling as the girls in their scented finery pranced past. Nina was perfectly happy just to listen and take in their discussion of fertilizer brands, tractor parts, meat to market, and a clutch of other concepts she didn't understand. After a couple of drinks, the boys were ready to dance. Nina and Sarinda declined several times, partly because they weren't out on the pool like the boys were. Well, Nina wasn't. Sarinda was feeling torn. And partly because they didn't have the first clue what to do. From a distance, the dancing still looked fearsome. The girls were being flung about by the boys, and every so often somebody would crash into a trestle table or topple to the floor. It was all good-natured fun, though, and nobody did anything but laugh, as the noise levels continued to rise and the amount of floor space taken up by the wildly reeling dancers got larger and larger. High heels were starting to be thrown off here and there. Lennox, Nina noticed, stayed resolutely on the side of the dance floor. She tried smiling at him, and was about to ask him how the lambs were getting on, when he hailed a man he knew across the floor, an older gentleman wearing unflattering tartan trews. They immediately plunged deep into conversation. The boys had begun talking about feed compounds, and slightly emboldened by the very strong gin and tonics, Nina wandered over to join them.
"Hi," she said. "I wanted to ask how the lambs were getting on."
Both men stared at her, quite rudely.
"Yes, fine," said Lennox dismissively, then turned back to his friend.
Nina felt stung. She'd been up all night helping this guy, and first he didn't want them to come to the dance, and now he was completely ignoring her.
"Not dancing?"
she asked rather cheekily. His brow furrowed.
"No, thanks,"
he said shortly. The other man stared into the distance.
"I wasn't asking," said Nina, annoyed and embarrassed. "I just wondered, that's all."
"No," said Lennox shortly. "Not for me."
The silence became embarrassing, and Nina was thinking about beating a retreat when, thankfully, a young man came up and asked her rather nervously if she would like to dance. She was about to politely refuse, when, to her surprise, she spotted Sarinda waltzing towards the dance floor in another chap's arms.
"What are you doing?"
Nina hissed after her.
"Come on," shouted Sarinda. "For goodness sake, we're not here for long. Might as well have a shot."
Nina shook her head.
"You're mad,"
she said, before realizing that the young chap who'd asked her, whose name was Archie, was looking crestfallen and obviously feeling a bit of an idiot. She was conscious that all his mates were lined up watching them from the other side of the room, so with a glance to her left, where Lennox had dived back into conversation with his friend, she extended her hand.
"Of course, I'd love to,"
she said loudly, while Archie flushed the same colour as his hair. As he led her to the floor, or what felt to Nina a bit like a gladiatorial arena, she whispered,
"You're going to have to tell me what to do. I don't know what's going on."
At this, Archie looked less terrified and puffed up his chest a little bit.
"Don't you worry yourself," he said.
"You're with me now. Just follow me." To begin with, Nina couldn't follow anyone. It was a little like being on a waltzer at a fairground, where you had to scream if you wanted to go faster. There was a lot of yelling and shouting, and some competitive arm-swinging from the men, and at first it seemed to be nothing but a melee, a game of rugby on a dance floor. Then, as Archie patiently showed her the repeated moves, she gradually came to recognize the sequence of dips, twirls, and claps, and before she knew it,
He was flying her around as she twisted and turned. She found herself caught up in the music and laughing with excitement. But just as she had figured it out, the band stopped playing, and she had to finish, breathless and disappointed. The second dance, she got the hang of it straight away, as the entire room danced in a circle for 8 counts and back. Archie grinned at her widely as he spun her away from the circle, and when she came back, she found he had moved down one, and now a heavily bearded young chap was grinning at her just as brightly and preparing to twirl her around. Emboldened by the heady atmosphere, the alcohol, the sense of being unimaginably far from home, of being somebody else, Nina threw herself into dancing with a will. She had always been dainty, but never quite confident enough to dance where anyone might see. Here, though, nobody cared or noticed. The emphasis wasn't on looking good or being sexy or standing out. It was about hurling yourself into it and dancing as if you didn't have a care in the world or a worry or even a thought. It was dancing as catharsis. And Nina very quickly found that she absolutely loved it. The atmosphere in the barn was making her dizzy. She could hear Sarinda laughing loudly and bouncing off tables several couples away, but she felt as if she was moving in and out of the dance as a piece of something larger, barely an individual at all, as the music burned louder and hotter in her ears. She joined in the huge round of applause as the dance ended, then curtsied deeply and drank greedily from the fresh bottle of local cider Archie passed to her.
"And no," said the caller from the band, "it's time for the Dashing White Sergeant."
Nina raised her eyebrows at Archie, who nodded enthusiastically. All around them, a massive land grab was going on as people broke up other couples and partnerships.
"What's going on?"
"This one's in threes. We need another girl, or another boy," said Archie.
They glanced around. Everyone was divvied up already, and all the girls were gone. A row of large chaps were standing at the back, obviously not wanting to dance, and instead concentrating very hard on drinking their pints. Their faces were bright red. Nina glanced round. There was no one else. Except... She looked for Lennox, but he was busy. Fine. She wasn't looking for him anyway, she told herself. Archie managed to round up Fat Tam, who'd been in the Land Rover with them, and they joined up with another lot who had 2 girls to make a mixed group of 6. Archie briefly explained the dance to Nina. First of all, they went round in a circle, then back in a circle. Then Nina, in the middle, had to dance with each of the boys beside her and with the boy in the middle of the other group. They had to perform a courtly sidestep, then whirl each other round by their waists, then move back and forward. Finally, they moved under the raised hands of the other group and started again with the next 3 they met. Nina frowned. It seemed complicated. But as she got started, she began to see the pattern, the simple beauty of the circles coming together, bowing to one another, then coming apart again. From above, it would look like the petals of a flower opening. Her light floral dress was ideal for twirling, as she was whizzed round by the men, and her ballet pumps were perfect. Her cheeks were pink, giving colour to her normally pale face, and her hair bounced and spun around her head as she danced, completely unself-conscious for the first time in what felt like so long. Sarinda, catching sight of her when they danced in the same circle, thought that if Scotland could do shy little Nina this much good, it might have rather more going for it than she'd thought. Near the end of the dance, Nina ducked under some other arms and came up to their new group, only to be confronted by the figure of Lennox straight ahead. The 2 girls dancing by his side, he was the figure in the middle, just as she was, were rather drunk, giggling and flirting with him, but he was completely oblivious. And, Nina noticed, he was a fine dancer, slipping in and out exactly on the beat, effortlessly swinging and catching the squealing girls. Controlled. When it was her turn to dance towards him, she looked at him crossly.
"Thought you weren't dancing," she said,
although she regretted it almost immediately, annoyed with herself for looking like she cared even the tiniest bit that this grumpy, stupid old farmer would happily dance with some blonde floozy but not with her. Then, suddenly, he caught her by the waist and spun her round, and she realized that her feet had lifted quite off the ground.
She felt like thistledown as she flew through the air, her hair a sheet behind her, her dress flowing. And she looked up at him as she landed, but he just picked her up again as if she was nothing, and she flew once more and landed back perfectly in the exact same spot. And there was nothing to do except smile and curtsy and move on. Although Nina found she hesitated, just a tad, and tried to hold his eye. But he was gone, and she didn't see him again for the rest of the night. Nina and Sarinda sat in the back of the truck that someone had commandeered to drive them home. It trundled through the morning mist towards the village, pink and gold alighting on the fields, the dew turning everything to a glistening web. It was, Nina was astonished to see, after four by the time the last of the fiddles was packed away, and girls everywhere were looking through the hay for their shoes. She was exhausted, but happily, wonderfully, down to the bone dancing and laughing exhausted. She realized quite quickly that Sarinda wanted to sit next to Fat Tam, so she moved into the body of the cab, where there was a pile of three hairy men all fast asleep.
"They're going straight back to work," said Archie, who was still awake, his shirt unbuttoned, his friendly, freckled face beaming at her.
"Me too."
"Really?"
"Aye. No lions for farmers."
They were approaching the cobbled road down to Lennox's farm. Archie looked at her.
"This is my stop," said Nina. "Thank you. Thank you so much for a wonderful evening. I really, really needed it."
Archie leaned forward.
Could I maybe...
"No," said Nina. "Thank you. Tonight was exactly what I needed. But I think that was maybe all. Though you are a wonderful dance teacher."
He smiled.
"Thanks," he looked at her. "You're not from round here."
"You just noticed?"
No, I just meant, I know you're not from round here, but it feels like you've fitted in really well. And not everybody does."
Nina beamed with pleasure.
"Thank you," she said.
Archie banged on the side of the van, and it stopped. Nina banged on the side of Sarinda, and she stopped too.
"Oh," said Fat Tam.
"Another time," said Nina, jumping down and giving Sarinda a hand.
Sarinda had drunk more cider than Nina had.
"This is a great place," she was saying. This is good. I like Fat Tam."
"He liked you too," said Nina. "He was going at you like you were breakfast."
"Oh, yeah,"
said Sarinda, who was carrying her shoes.
"Do you think he was maybe just hungry? Can you make me more breakfast now, please?"
Chapter 16. Both the girls slept long and late the next day. Nina sat up about 11 as Sarinda made coffee, and they both looked at something Nina had bought called potato scones. In the end, they decided to toast them and slather them with butter, which turned out to be a better solution than either of them could have imagined possible, as they ate them looking out into the windy sunlight.
"What a beautiful day," Nina exclaimed.
"Lots of wind," pointed out Sarinda.
"Yes,"
explained Nina patiently. "It stops you getting too hot." "You have gone totally native," said Sarinda.
"Not as much as you have," said Nina. "I haven't swapped DNA with anyone."
"When did you get so cheeky?"
said Sarinda, wolfing another potato scone.
"Oh, my God, these are good."
"I don't know,"
said Nina, genuinely musing on it. She'd noticed it in herself. She opened the door and stood enjoying the warmth of the sun and the cool breeze beneath it.
I think it was when we moved the books out, found them a home."
Sarinda nodded.
"I think you're right. A psychological weight has been lifted."
"And also an actual weight," pointed out Nina. "But yeah, it's like we can just be normal friends again, without you tutting at me all the time."
"Because you were about to bring my ceiling down," said Sarinda.
"Yes, exactly. Weight lifted."
"I've noticed something else," said Sarinda.
"What?"
"You haven't got a book in your hands."
"Well, I'm just about to go to the book van, with all my lovely books, and then I'm going to go out and sell some books."
"I know, but you didn't read a book over breakfast."
"I was talking to you."
"You didn't take a book to bed.
We were drunk, and it was 4 o'clock in the morning. You've stopped clutching one everywhere like a security blanket. I didn't do that.
Said Sarinda.
Anyway, what's wrong with reading?
Nothing is wrong with reading, said Sarinda, as I have told you a million billion times before. But it finally seems you're doing both. Read, live, read, live, and proceed, etc.
Nina looked out at the wild flowers growing in the meadow to the left of the lower field. They rippled gently in the breeze. Over in the woods, she could smell the faintest drift of bluebells on the wind.
"Mm-hmm,"
she said. "You know I'm right," said Sarinda. "You're getting happy. I can tell."
"It's not that," said Nina. "I just want another one of those potato scones."
"You're also hungrier," said Sarinda. "Also, I can tell you, a very, very good sign."
"Shut up. And, oh, Lord, I am going to work. Yes, I am. You can lie here and hang out."
"I totally intend to," said Sarinda. "Got anything to read?"
"Shut up. Again. And if Mr. Farmer Grumpy Pants comes round?"
"No. Don't say anything. He's an arse. Roger."
Chapter 17. It was blowy but bright, and Nina pulled a jumper on over a grey dress and leggings. The little shop of Happy Ever After, minus its Second World War hardbacks, still looked as tremendous in the light of a new day as she remembered it. She made sure that all the canvas straps were pulled tight to stop the books from falling out, then got behind the wheel, treble-checking, as she always did now, that the handbrake was on and the gear stick was in neutral, before she even thought about pulling away. She took a deep breath and started the van. It was market day in neighbouring Octodub. She'd checked everything out before she started, and planned to follow the crowds around, so she headed straight there. Sure enough, there was a throng around the stalls, where people had gathered to sell their handmade cheeses, and occasionally a little unpasteurised milk under the counter, if you asked nicely. Straw dollies, warm eggs, and enormous big splurges of cakes. Vast, soft, pillowy things, chock-full of sensational ingredients. Nina kept her eye on a large ginger sponge for later. There were handmade sausages, venison, beef, and even ostrich. There were early harvests of artichokes and potatoes, still marked with the dark earth. Vast, deep green cabbages, and fresh young sweet lettuces. Some forced tomatoes, which were still small and awkward-looking, but the cauliflowers and carrots were already gorgeous. Nina had also been told about the strawberry season, where the fruit threatened to pour over the sides of the baskets, there were just so many. Land Rovers, jeeps, and all forms of mud-splattered cars were parked along the little narrow cobbled streets and pale grey stone walls, but Nina found her booked slot easily enough and pulled up happily. Even before she had put out the big illuminated letters, shoppers were circling around. As she pulled the doors wide, the women in particular were practically jumping inside to have a look. Nina looked behind her proudly. The stock looked neat and tidy and enticing. Some of the particularly beautiful covers were turned out to face the room. In a moment of madness that morning, she had hung a chandelier from the light connector on the ceiling, but she was pleased now, as it swung prettily in the breeze. A woman looked round.
"Goodness," she said, smiling, "I don't know where to start."
"I know what you mean," said Nina. The woman glanced down at her rambunctious toddler in reins, who even now was cheerfully gumming the beanbags.
I only read baby books when I was pregnant, and now I've totally got out of the habit."
Nina's heart leapt, and she jumped into action.
"Well," she said, "maybe you need this."
And she brought out a beautiful book translated from Russian called We Are All Big Girls Now. It was a series of very short chapters about the experience of early motherhood, illustrated in glorious colours like a medieval book of hours, ranging from the deeply profound, the passing on of the female bloodline, to the scary tales of Baba Yaga that the author's own grandmother used to terrify her with, to the simple logistical difficulties of a toddler who wouldn't keep his snowsuit on in St. Petersburg in January. It was a book that had made Nina herself feel entirely and deeply maternal, without ever having given a thought to motherhood,
and she had never met a new mother who hadn't adored it. The woman's face lit up as she looked at the beautiful illustrations.
"Perfect," she said. "Thomas, stop that. Stop that at once."
But Thomas was not for stopping. He had spied and retrieved the biggest, shiniest book about buses and trucks and diggers and forklifts that Nina had on the shelves. Nina looked away, feeling awkward. She wasn't at all used to people having to actually pay for books, unless they were late, in which case, if they looked suitably poor and or distressed, she always waived the fine anyway. The woman looked at it, then said,
"Do you know what? This might even keep him quiet whilst I'm trying to do the shopping, instead of grabbing at the sticky buns."
And she took that one too, and Nina found that actually taking the money and handing over change wasn't a problem at all. An old lady came in next, and sighed, and said she hadn't realised the books were all so new, because nobody was writing the old-fashioned style of books anymore. Did Nina know what she meant? And what a shame that was, because all she wanted was a modern book with old-fashioned values. As it turned out, Nina did know exactly what she meant, and pulled out a rather charming series called St. Swithin's, about a young nurse starting work in a hospital, but instead of lots of paperwork and reorganisations, this nurse, whose name was pleasingly Margaret, managed to exist in a contemporary multiracial world by simply loving and caring for all her patients wherever they were from, whilst regularly taking time out to go and perform daring deeds of rescue. She was also in the early throes of an exciting, but also excitingly chaste, love affair with the gorgeous, sensationally brave and daring surgeon, Dr. Rachel Melchett.
"Try this," Nina said with a smile. "If you don't like it, you can swap it, and if you do like it, there's about another 47 to read."
The woman had already lit up reading the back blurb.
"No, I think this might do nicely," she said. "Do you have a large print edition?"
Nina cursed to herself. The problem was that the large print copies were so in demand and well borrowed, there hadn't been anything in good enough condition to liberate.
"No," she said, "but I promise I'll source the large print for the next lot."
After that, there was a steady stream, some people just wanting a look around, some with specific titles in mind. If they didn't know what they were after, Nina tried to get a grip on the kind of thing they liked and steered them towards the appropriate item. As she bagged up and took money, and credit cards, on an incredibly clever little device Sarinda had taught her to stick onto her iPhone, she spotted a young girl hovering outside. She appeared to be about 16, awkward-looking, glasses, a little puppy fat still. She was wearing a long-sleeved cardigan with the sleeves pulled right down over her fists, with big holes through which her thumbs poked.
"Hey,"
Nina said gently. The girl looked at her, startled, and backed away.
"It's okay," said Nina.
She gave the girl her best smile.
"You can just come in," she said. "I don't mind. Just come and have a look. You don't have to buy anything."
"Nah, it's okay," said the girl,
and walked away with her head down. It had been a more successful launch than Nina could possibly have imagined, and she drove back later that afternoon full of the joys, and with a bottle of Prosecco, which they used to toast their enormous, relative success.
"Well, I did do the painting," said Sarinda.
Then they sat in the sitting room while Nina got down to doing the books and checking what she needed to order next. "This is the less glamorous side of running your own business," pointed out Sarinda.
"Wait till I get a puncture," said Nina. "Oh, Lord, I'm so tired." "Go to bed, then. I was going to maybe pop down to the level crossing, wave to Marek."
"Seriously," said Sarinda.
"What is this, the railway children?" "No, I looked out a book he might like."
It was a very old but mint-condition edition of I Am David. She had no idea if he'd read it or not, but she thought he would like it. After all, he knew a little bit about what it was like to roam. Sarinda gave her a stern look.
"Are you sure about this?"
Nina flushed. She didn't want to admit how much she had thought about him, his gentle, melancholic, poetic nature. He seemed so exotic, so sad.
"Just a thought," she said.
"Well, maybe have that thought when you've had a little more sleep," said Sarinda. Chapter 18. After several days busier than she'd have thought possible, Nina decided it was time to start story hour. The sky was overcast and grey, so she didn't have to keep the blackboard outside for very long before lots of families started to crowd into the van. She read the children the story of the 9 tumbling princes who wove the sky, and they sat, snotting, crusting noses, missing teeth, whistling occasionally, utterly rapt. And she sold lots and lots of books afterwards. But my goodness, they left the most dreadful mess, particularly if they had small, clambering siblings. She was just looking up with a cloth in her hand and trying to deal with other customers when she saw the girl again. This girl had a look that Nina recognized. She looked avaricious, hungry for books, desperate to get her hands on something.
"You again," said Nina cheerily. "I have to start charging you rent. Come on in. Have a look."
Lumpily, her posture was terrible, the girl mounted the 2 little steps into the van. Inside, her face lit up. It changed her completely. She had the loveliest smile.
"It's nice," she said,
speaking so quietly Nina could barely hear her. She moved towards the shelves, entranced, running her fingers across the spines, smiling at certain books as if they were good friends.
"What kind of thing are you looking for?"
"Oh," the girl's face dropped.
"I can't really afford to buy books. Here, this is Miss Field."
She took out a Daniel Clowes that had slipped between 2 Frank Darabonts.
"Thanks,"
said Nina in surprise. The girl handed her the book and expertly continued scanning the stacks.
"You like books?"
The girl nodded.
"More than anything. It was shite when they shut the library. There aren't any books in my house."
"None at all?"
"Nah. My mum would sell them, if she knew what they were."
She didn't say it in a self-pitying way, simply as a statement of fact. Nina noticed that the girl's clothes were cheap and not heavy enough for the breezy weather. She glanced thoughtfully around the post-storytime mess.
"Well," she said thoughtfully, "you know, I could do with an occasional helping hand around here. I can't afford to pay you very much to begin with."
She couldn't afford to pay herself at this point. By the time she'd bought a bit of petrol and put something aside for stock and the occasional sandwich, it would only be 30 minutes here and there, and you could take a book at the end of it. Would that work? The girl's face lit up.
"Seriously?"
"It's not a job," said Nina hurriedly. "I don't want to exploit you or anything like that. It's literally just a quick tidy-up." But the girl had already started neatly arranging the children's books in height order, so the little ones could easily pick out the brightest colours and jolliest creatures.
"What's your name?"
"Ainsley." The girl didn't even turn round.
"Right, thanks, Ainsley," said Nina,
and went back to the steps of the van, where she sold a full set of Regency potboilers to a local lady with an enormous Labrador, a woolly tweed dress, and a completely bizarre accent. It was only when she took out a large checkbook, Nina would have said that they didn't take checks, but the woman was buying an awful lot of books, plus she was quite frightening, that Nina saw she was Lady Kinross. Then she didn't know where to look.
"That's the Porsche woman from up the road," said Ainsley when she'd gone. "Her house has got 100 rooms. She hasn't even been in some of them."
After 20 minutes, Ainsley had straightened everything perfectly and had made a start on sweeping the floor. Nina was embarrassed and insisted on buying her a coffee, then looked round to choose a book for her. Eventually, she realized exactly what it should be, even though it was outrageously expensive. Four Girl, a graphic novel written by a young South American girl about a female superhero in Rio, taking from the absurdly rich and giving to the poor in the favelas. It was funny, glamorous, and completely and utterly kick-ass, and Ainsley's face lit up like a light bulb. Her distressed, downtrodden look had lifted completely.
"Can I come again?"
she whispered.
"Yes," said Nina. "Come again on Saturday. It's market day."
Ainsley almost shook with pleasure. Nina noticed that she stashed her book away incredibly carefully, tucked right at the bottom of her bag, amongst scruffy papers and dog-eared homework. Nina worried that this was to keep it away from prying eyes. Ainsley caught her looking, and blushed deeply and scurried away. Nina watched her go, wondering.
"I need to get a message to Marek," said Nina. "Seriously, I do. No messing this time. Work stuff."
"You mean start a major smuggling exercise?" said Sarinda, who was kindly doing the accounts in return for food, as they explored with alacrity the excellent fresh fish, cheese and fruit and veg of the region.
"You know, I'm not sure this is right," Nina sighed. "But I didn't know. I didn't know we'd be this busy."
It was true. Everywhere they'd gone in the little shop of Happy Ever After, every market they'd stopped at, they'd been overwhelmed by people who hadn't had a bookshop or a library in their community for the longest time.
"I know," said Sarinda. "Remember when they used to let you out of work at 4 p.m?
"On Wednesdays," protested Nina. "Not every day, just one day. Anyway, when are you going back to work?" Sarinda shrugged. "Oh, I have a ton of holidays stored up."
"Yes, but I thought you were going to Vegas or L.A. or Miami. Somewhere more suitable for how fabulous you are," said Nina.
"Those are exactly the words you used. You didn't say, 'I'm just off to rural Scotland to do some accounts.'"
"I know, but..."
Sarinda looked slightly embarrassed and gazed at her feet. She was wearing...
"Are those new wellies?"
She was indeed sporting a pair of very fancy new floral Wellingtons.
"Because, you know, there isn't much call for new Wellingtons in Las Vegas."
"And how would you know?" Nina conceded this was a fair point, but even so she narrowed her eyes at Sarinda.
"Have you been calling Fat Tam?" she said. "None of your business."
They were at a standoff. Nina knew from long experience that it was best to change the subject.
"So anyway, I was wondering," she began nervously, "what would you think if maybe I asked Marek?"
"You'll get him in trouble," said Sarinda, with a warning glint in her eye.
"It's just that Griffin has told me about another library that's trying to offload a lot of stock before it closes, and they'll sell it to me pretty cheaply."
Nina had given Marek's email address to Griffin in preparation for moving the stock, but hadn't discussed it with Marek yet.
"They keep on shutting libraries," Nina said sadly.
"Oof, that's harsh," said Sarinda.
"I know," said Nina. "But you can't risk getting Marek into trouble. I thought you liked him."
"I like to think of it as evacuating the books to safety," said Nina. "Letting them fly free into the world, don't you see? It's a good thing. Only it's against the law. What if Marek was secretly transporting dynamite?"
"Books aren't dynamite."
"What about Mein Kampf?"
"Sarinda, what? I'm just saying, you're asking him to do something bad."
"I don't think he'd mind."
"He wouldn't mind because of you asking him, which is worse."
"Okay," said Nina. "I suppose you're right." "I am right.
I just wanted to ask him. I thought he wanted to do it."
"I'm sure he does. You still can't ask him.
Neans, I know you're a major successful businesswoman now, but I'm telling you, this is wrong."
Nina paused.
"All right. Okay. I won't. I'll try and figure out another way."
"Fine.
What are we doing tonight?"
Sarinda turned away, looking slightly embarrassed.
"Actually," she said, "actually, I'm going out, kind of. I kind of have a date."
Nina stood up.
"No way! I knew it! No way!
What? No one would ask me on a date?"
"Of course they'd ask you on a date, you idiot," said Nina.
"Who is it?
Fat Tam, I hope."
"No, he was really a Highland Gateway drug.
Angus, or Fergus. One of the Gusses, anyway."
"You don't remember which one?"
"Big sturdy forearms, broad manly chest, thick curly hair."
"You sound like you're dating a tree. What was wrong with Fat Tam?"
"Oh, I was just warming up," said Sarinda. "No, it's another lovely boy from the Cayley. I can't understand a word he says, up to and including his name, so it barely matters."
"Where are you going to?"
"A Michelin-starred restaurant, followed by a top West End show," said Sarinda.
"Joke.
We're going to the pub, of course. Where else would we go?"
Sarinda got ready whilst Nina felt mildly jealous. She would have gone and tidied the books up, but Ainsley had already done that for her, and the stock was looking decidedly low anyway. Instead, she decided to heat up some soup and reread something, anything, set in a boarding school, which rarely failed to cheer her up.
"I mean it. Don't go and see Marek. Don't do anything bad," Sarinda said once she'd finished getting ready.
"I wasn't going to.
And don't you do anything bad with someone whose name you don't even know."
"I don't mean that. I mean the delivery thing. Just because you're quite good at losing jobs doesn't mean everyone else is."
"I won't."
Then there were lights on the gravel driveway, and a large car drew up.
"Ooh," said Sarinda excitedly. "It's the Hogwarts Express."
She kissed Nina on both cheeks and danced out of the door, even as a tall outline stepped down from the SUV to open the door for her, and they drove away into the misty evening, not the slightest bit dark at 8 p.m. Nina tried to read, but for once she couldn't concentrate. The words swam in front of her eyes as she was distracted by the baaing of lambs in the fields and wondered if any of them were her own personal lambs. Then she thought about stock for the shop, but there wasn't anywhere in Scotland that could provide what she needed. She checked online, almost falling down a rabbit hole of beautiful first editions and ancient manuscripts for sale in Edinburgh. No, she knew where there was a source of great and saleable and almost free books that would be greeted with joy and really enable her to get the business moving, and she knew how to get at them. All she needed to do was... She decided to make some shortbread to take her mind off it. Just butter, sugar, and flour, all creamed together, simple and delicious and easily done. She made far too much. She looked at it sitting there and decided to wrap some up in a pretty bag she happened to have, and a gift box Sarinda had bought her. It was only 9:15 and still light outside. She would just take a walk. She wouldn't run into the train, it wasn't due for hours yet. Just a walk. She put her wellies on and walked up the side of the field, looking at the wind turbines spinning slowly far away, and the lambs bouncing along beside the fence, playing and prancing with one another. She took a handful of sweet meadow grass and held it out to a lazy-looking ewe, who came over and munched on it calmly, as the little ones underneath her sucked milk steadily. It was a tranquil scene, and she smiled. Then she trudged onwards. She needed the exercise after sitting in the van all day. The air was fresh, and she pulled her jacket closer. She was amazed, truly, how much she wanted the little shop of Happy Ever After to work, now that she'd seen it could. Now she knew that there were people, people everywhere, who cared about and loved books as much as she did. How on earth would she get her stock up? She saw it on the tree before she got to it. It was high up, if you weren't specifically looking for it and didn't already know the exact and slightly sickly tree, you might never have seen it, even if your feet had led you almost without your knowledge all the way to the level crossing. It was a stone-coloured worsted bag, rough, with a square bottom, carefully thrown over a branch with a counterweighted rope. The train would barely have had to slow down. She shinned carefully up the tree, mindful of what Lennox had said about it, and peered inside the bag. It was utterly overflowing with wild flowers, sharp yellow gorse, bluebells and daffodils, lily of the valley and baby's breath. It was glorious. Without allowing herself to think about what she was doing, she tied the bag with the shortbread and a book around the tip of the branch. If they slowed the train, they ought to be able to simply lift it down or fish it off. She slipped back down the tree again. It was definitely getting darker now. She plunged her face into the bag of flowers and inhaled. There was plenty of lavender deep down in there, and rich, thick heather, as well as the lighter, sweeter tinkling smells of the bluebells. It was heaven, and she swung the bag all the way back home. Lennox was sitting on a bench outside the farmhouse in the nearly faded light. She didn't quite catch what he was doing at first, and merely nodded at him. He grunted back in response. She focused closer. He appeared to be... She smiled, unable to help herself. "He looks just like you," she said. Lennox looked up again from where he was feeding the tiny lamb with a baby's bottle.
"Think dead lambs are funny, do you?" he grunted back.
Nina rolled her eyes. "You're the one always telling me to wake up to the realities of farming," she said. "What's up with him, then?" Lennox looked down, an uncharacteristically gentle look on his face.
"His mam didn't want him.
Happens sometimes." "Why not? Did she have another lamb?"
"No, just him. They get rejected. Not all mothers want their bairns."
"So you've adopted him?" she said.
Lennox shrugged. "No, just doing the night shift when the boys have gone home."
"Work never ends as a farmer," said Nina, genuinely impressed.
"Nay," said Lennox, "it don't. So, you've been off seeing someone?"
Nina allowed herself just for a moment to think about the long tinge of Marek's eyelashes on his high cheekbones. "And no, too early." Lennox put down the lamb, who scampered back into the kennel where he was obviously sleeping with Parsley.
"Not for me," he said shortly. "Think I'll turn in. Good night."
And Nina carried on towards the barn, and barely woke, even when Sarinda came in, extremely late and rather inebriated, giggling loudly and telling someone to be quiet.
Chapter 19. "You've got your head in the clouds," said Sarinda. Nina gave her a look. "Well, you've got your bum in the bed, so I have to look somewhere." Somewhere along the line, Sarinda's mini-break had turned into a massive leave of absence. The weather, completely unusually for Scotland, if the jackets people carried nervously everywhere were anything to go by, had turned unutterably beautiful. Clear blue skies, with the occasional high white clouds scudding along like galloping lambs. Nina had, true to her word, not done anything. Hadn't contacted Marek or asked him any favours at all. The books had arrived regardless. Griffin had independently arranged with Marek to send up stock from the latest library to close, adding an invoice for the small fee, and a slightly poignant note saying that if she was short of staff at any point, to get in touch, as the overgrown children he had to work with were all driving him absolutely crackers. He really wanted to be working with books again, rather than trying to stop kids from getting round the library security system to access large amounts of pornography, which appeared to be something of a full-time job. Marek had simply placed the books by the side of the railway line. Jim had alerted her by email, and she'd picked them up in the morning. "You're a book-smuggling operation," Sarinda observed. "This isn't right at all. If the police track him down, what about when the railway realises he's stopping all the time? If he loses his job, will it all be fun and games then?" Every single box had come with a little something from Marek on it. A joke, a poem, even a lovely drawing of a dog. And every day, when Nina had finished tending to the book-hungry of Lanchish Down, or Fellbrightwater, or Lewithness, or Cardenby, or Brayfoot, or Chooks, or Donnybristle, or Balwary, where she would park the van and serve up the hottest romances, the grimmest crime-fests, or the latest, goriest Japanese serial killer series, as always going to the mildest-mannered-looking of people. In Nina's experience, the more sensibly dressed the person, the more unutterably depraved they liked their fiction. No doubt there was a cosmic balance in it somewhere. She would unpack some more. She also sold a lot of copies of the Hamlet cookbook, written by a woman who had moved to a tiny island in the Hebrides, and who ate nothing except what she could digest of the local grasses. There was a lot of boiling involved, but you did get thin pretty fast. Sarinda could tut all she liked, but she couldn't deny that Nina was beginning to make a success of it. Ainsley was looking as shy as ever as she unpacked the latest box, then gasped in delight.
"What?" said Nina, leaning over.
"It's a whole box of Up on the Rooftops," said Ainsley. "An entire box? It's like gold. Not the originals. I havenae. I mean, there was one in my old school, but I wasn't allowed to touch it." "Oh, goodness," said Nina. "Oh, goodness, they can't have known what they had, otherwise they could have sold them."
"But you bought them," said Ainsley. "I bought 100 boxes, sight unseen, library closure clearance," said Nina. "You don't really know what you're going to get, but this is treasure."
It was a clutch of hardback first editions of the famous book about three children who had to cross London without touching the ground. The books had inlaid binding, golden covers, and numerous exquisite line drawings.
"Oh, my word," said Nina, bending down. "Should we just close the doors and sit down and read our favourite